From Maine Public Radio and mainepublic.org, I'm Carol Bousquet with the news on this day in Maine, Wednesday, June 18, 2025. State lawmakers advanced a more than $300 million budget bill today, but as Kevin Miller reports, the spending plan has critics in both parties.
The Democratic-controlled legislature passed an $11.3 billion budget this spring that funds state government for the next 2 years. This second budget adds another $320 million in spending. It would plug a funding gap in Maine care and provide more money to nursing homes, child welfare programs, general assistance, and Maine's public colleges and universities. To offset some of that spending, the bill would increase the cigarette tax by $1.50 a pack, tax recreational cannabis at a higher rate, and, for the first time, apply Maine's sales tax to streaming services like Netflix and Spotify. The bill stumbled in the House Wednesday morning after six Democrats joined every Republican in voting against the spending plan. But five of those Democrats later changed their votes to support the bill after it passed the Senate in a party-line vote. The bill is likely to come up for final approval Wednesday evening. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Kevin Miller.
When the Wells Police Department entered a now-paused agreement with ICE, it generated fierce pushback and drew statewide attention. At the same time, though, many other state and local law enforcement agencies are informally cooperating with federal immigration authorities, often by calling Border Patrol following traffic stops. While the state legislature this week debates a bill to restrict such practices, Ari Snyder reports that for some immigrants in Maine, the damage is already done.
Luis, an Ecuadorian asylum seeker who owns a contracting company in Maine, says he was on his way to a job in the town of Oxford in early April when he was involved in a minor traffic accident. Luis, who asked to be identified only by his first name given his ongoing immigration case, says an Oxford police officer checked his license and insurance information and asked for the address of the job site he was headed to.
I gave all the information to him. I gave him the name of the customer, and he told me, okay, you're free to go.
But shortly after that, Luis says the police arrived at the job site and arrested him. He says the officer told him it was a request from Border Patrol. A Homeland Security document relating the encounter says Luis presented a valid New Jersey driver's license and had no criminal record. But because he said he was from Ecuador, the local officer called Border Patrol to verify his immigration status. The Border Patrol agent, quote, determined that the subject was illegally in the United States, despite the fact that Luis says he has a pending asylum claim, something he's been pursuing for over a decade. He was eventually transferred to ICE custody in Plymouth, Massachusetts. After living in the U.S. for over a decade, starting a business and trying to follow the rules, Luis says it was jarring to suddenly find himself in jail.
And after all these things, they treat us like criminals.
Luis's lawyer, Sean Chatterjee, says the case reflects President Trump's escalating immigration crackdown.
It's so unusual, or at least it was before the current administration, for someone who was already in immigration court, had a pending asylum claim, had been going into their hearings, to be suddenly just put into custody by immigration.
Chatterjee, who's based in Massachusetts, says Luis's arrest also fits a growing pattern he's seen among his clients from Maine.
I'm seeing this happen so often in Maine now, where there's no other discernible reason why someone was referred to immigration other than just their appearance.
Lisa Parisio with the Portland-based Immigrant Legal Advocacy Project says her group is also seeing more frequent examples of immigration arrests resulting from traffic violations like speeding or having snow on the roof.
Even for being a bystander, you know, somebody was handed over to immigration officers by local law enforcement because they had stopped to help somebody at a traffic accident.
Parisio says the Trump administration is relying on this type of informal cooperation to achieve its mass deportation goals.
And the only way that they are going to be able to do that is by getting the resources of state and local law enforcement and having our taxpayer dollars and our public safety resources diverted to doing that.
This week, the state legislature is debating a bill that would generally prohibit state and local law enforcement from stopping, interrogating, or detaining someone based on immigration status alone. It would also require a court order or criminal warrant in order to transfer someone into the custody of federal immigration agencies. Parisio and other supporters say the goal is to keep local law enforcement focused on local issues. But opponents, including Republican State Representative Jennifer Poirier, have raised public safety concerns.
This bill makes Maine less safe. Limiting law enforcement's ability to cooperate with ICE prevents them from addressing individuals who could pose real risks.
Since his release from ICE custody last month, Luis says he's been scrambling to restart his contracting business after losing most of his clients during his unexpected incarceration. He says ICE also fitted him with an ankle monitor and requires him to stay within a 70-mile radius of his home, which he says makes it harder to find new clients. Adding to his financial pressures, he says several of his relatives have also landed in ICE custody, and he's trying to come up with the money to pay for lawyers and secure bond. Luis says after his arrest, it feels risky to get out on the road, but that he and other immigrant workers have no other choice.
We have to pay the bills, so we know it's a lot of risk to get out, but we have to continue working.
He says had it not been for the Oxford police officers called a border patrol, his life would not have been turned upside down. The department did not immediately respond to a request for comment. Luis's next court date is scheduled for September. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Ari Snyder.
Republican lawmakers and gun owners' rights groups want to give Maine voters an alternative to the red flag proposal on this fall's ballot, but time's running out for them. The November referendum would allow families to seek a court order forcing someone to temporarily give up their guns. Lawmakers have the option of placing a competing measure on the ballot, and David Trahan with the Sportsmen's Alliance of Maine says they have one ready to go that would build on Maine's existing yellow flag law.
We know how to take care of our own, and we look forward to this competing measure getting a work session, which so far has not been scheduled.
Lawmakers are aiming to wrap up the 2025 session as soon as Wednesday, and it's unclear whether the legislature's Democratic leadership will bring the competing measure before the House and Senate. Maine lawmakers have passed a bill that moves up the state's timeline to reach net zero carbon emissions. Molly Enking has more.
The new law would require the state's energy office to expand Maine's existing renewable portfolio to 90% by 2040, focusing on rooftop solar, wind, and battery storage produced here in the state. The remaining 10% will be dedicated to a new category of clean resources, like hydropower. Achieving 100% clean electricity could lower average household energy costs by about $1,300 per year, according to a study conducted by the state's energy office last year. That's because pricing can be volatile for fuels sourced out of state, like natural gas and heating oil. A previous law signed by Mills in 2019 had set a goal of 100% clean energy by 2050. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Molly Enking.
The home addresses of Maine lawmakers are no longer listed on state websites after a Minnesota lawmaker and her husband were shot and killed in their home on Saturday. A second Minnesota lawmaker and his wife were also wounded in a separate attack. Candidate information has been removed from the Maine Secretary of State's website, as well as the legislature's website. In a written statement, Secretary of State Shenna Bellows says the events in Minnesota are a reminder that, quote, safety concerns do not end at the door of the statehouse. While the state can remove legislators' personal addresses from state websites, the information can still be found in the white pages and other directories. Maine State Police have arrested the mother and stepfather of a 4-year-old Lewiston boy who died from a gunshot wound in May. As Patty White reports, relatives of Jasper Smith say the arrests offer some relief, but they want to see improvements in Maine's child welfare system.
State police say they charged 35-year-old Robert Smith with manslaughter and endangering the welfare of a child, and they arrested 27-year-old Michaela Smith on unrelated warrants. Police are still investigating the case, but say that emergency responders transported Jasper Smith to a Lewiston hospital on May 17th after receiving a 911 call, and he was later pronounced dead. Jasper's aunt, Laura Smith, says she and others had called State Child Protective Services multiple times to report concerns about her nephew's care as well as other children in the house. And while the arrests provide some justice, she says,
at the end of the day, my fight isn't over. I still want change for the kids in the state. I want to know that the babies in this state are safe, and nurtured and cared for and actually properly taken care of.
Smith says she wants to see reform in Maine's child welfare system. A spokesperson for the State Department of Health and Human Services has said they're unable to comment on cases due to confidentiality laws. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Patty White.
An independent investigation has been launched into the death of Baxter last month, the Department of Public Safety's first official comfort dog. The Animal Welfare Program of the Maine Department of Agriculture, Conservation, and Forestry has launched its own investigation independent of the State Department of Public Safety's. Officials say Baxter died when the state vehicle he was in stopped running, shutting down the air conditioning on an 83-degree day. Anyone who has broken the rules at school has probably spent some time in detention, a few hours stuck in a classroom monitored by a teacher who really doesn't want to be there either. Alternatives to this form of punishment can include some type of restorative task or community service, such as picking up trash. But one school counselor at Morse High School in Bath has been piloting a program that takes kids out into nature. Maddie Smith tagged along on a recent hike.
Leslie Trundy stops in front of a map on the Whisk Keg Trail in Bath to explain the route that her seven students will follow for the next 2 hours.
We kind of take a side shoot here, so we make a loop, but we'll come back along the river and then we'll come back. We should be back by 4 to the school, okay?
The students are serving detention for an array of infractions.
I yelled at a teacher rudely because I didn't feel like doing something, and when they tried to make me do it, I got angry and yelled at them.
Probably like skipping class or like added up tardies from class, like never like actually like getting in trouble.
Playing video games in my teacher's class, and she got mad at me, and I found that one stupid, so I was like, I'm not sitting in the classroom for that.
And instead of sitting in class, these three chose to spend their detention hiking after school. Trundy, a counselor at Morse, began the program after she attended an outdoor education conference this past fall. She wondered whether spending time outdoors might encourage the kids to open up about the problems they might be experiencing.
My hope was that time in the woods, like I could sort of take the skills that I have on the road with them or on the trail and be a listener for them and pay back the time to the school and sort of serve their consequence, but also receive more care and attention.
Trundy says she's fielded some criticism from those who don't believe that a walk in the woods is enough punishment for making poor choices, and says some parents have refused to let their kids take part. So, is it making a difference?
I don't think I have enough data yet that's statistically relevant. But I have had kids join the club because of going on the hike, and that I feel really very happy about.
The club, in this case, is an outdoor outing club that Trundy helps run.
Oh, it feels too hot to be free.
No, it's almost summer. It's late spring.
Halfway through the hike, the group takes a snack break, and Trundy reads a poem.
Hey, ready?
Yeah.
Can I see the buds that are swelling in the woods on the slopes, on the far side of the valley? I can't.
Freshman Nicholas Tangway is on detention for yelling at his teacher and says the hikes give him time and space to reflect in a way he couldn't just sitting in a classroom.
You know, it makes me have to, like, walk. It makes you breathe heavily, obviously, and it feels like an accomplishment, almost. And I think that maybe it's also good for people's mental health. I mean, in general, nature and hikes are just really good for people's mentality. So when you've had a bad day, the option to do this after knowing you have a detention means you have to dread it less.
Trundy says she intends to start up the optional hike program again in the fall. For Maine Public Radio News, I'm Maddie Smith.
And that's today's Maine News. For more stories, visit mainepublic.org and join Irwin Gratz for Morning Edition starting at 5 a.m. I'm Carol Bousquet. Thanks for listening.